Welcome to Platinum Property Training's podcast, where we will be talking about business, money, and let's not forget the economy, real estate, and bringing in real inspirations. These are people that are doing some great things in our world. Like, share, add this to your playlist, and subscribe to keep track of our updates. Okay, you beautiful people, sit back, relax, let's listen, and let's get down to business. You are very, very welcome back to this week's podcast. And today we have one of our own members, which is fantastic, coming in to share his knowledge in the field that he's been in for several years. Very, very interesting one again. So sit back, take a few notes, and let's kick off.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
Ross, you're very, very welcome. And I know it's no surprise podcasting to you. You've done plenty of them in the past.
Yeah. I had my own podcast for a number of years. I must contribute to it again for, over 100 shows at one point, yeah.
Good stuff. Teach me a thing or two here.
Oh, we're all still learning.
Lovely stuff. Well, look, Ross is going to give us a good intro into his past. So we're going to now kick off and I'll give a quick little intro to yourself and then tap into me and we'll get down and
absolutely
and into it. 18 years experience in the tech industry, which is a huge achievement. And it's a great industry to be involved in too. A seasoned leader and an expert in marketing and new business development, which, even when I read that out, marketing and new business, absolutely love it. So we're going to have a good intro about that tonight as well. Head of sales, big companies.
So I'm doing now, yeah.
Yeah. Board member and advisor, ex-HubSpot and Dell, which are big companies. Founder and exit two businesses and generated hundreds of millions in dollars in revenue.
So you tell me, yeah.
Yeah. Hope you retain some of that.
It's good that you can just read my handwriting there. I have all, that's all.
Sometimes. Podcaster as well. You had the podcaster show. What was the actual full name of it?
It's called the Global Tech Leaders Podcast. So it was a great business development tool for us. When I exited a business, I needed something to do. So I went into recruitment and I kind of tapped into the idea that people's egos are a useful thing to kind of latch onto. I did that and reached out to those folks and they told their stories. And I said, by the way, I see you're hiring. We have an audience of listeners who'd love to join your company. Would that make sense for you? And oh yeah, absolutely. Well, there's a fee for that part, you know.
Yeah.
But it's a great way for them to get involved, to get interested, and then similarly on the candidate side of the house, you can say, "By the way, we'd see you on the podcast. If you're going in for an interview, you might want to check that out before you go in. You're prepared." And the pitch the CEO back is, "Well, actually, you're getting pre-screened qualified candidates that are willing to put the time and effort into listening to the show, and therefore, you know, want to be there and research your company ahead of time." So it all depends on what you're looking to get out of it, you know.
Absolutely. And you can even hear the sales training in there. And so it should be good for people listening back in this. And then founder of Get Focus Sales and Marketing Consultancy. That was one of your own.
Yeah. So I do a bit of consultancy and take on equity and board seats for some folks that I work with on a kind of a part-time basis, as it were, just to add value. And startups is really my passion in life.
Startups is what you love. So you've seen this, if you coming up from early parts and then growing big.
Yeah, absolutely. Funding, you know, pre-seed, MVPs and moving on and falling on their arses as well. That happens too, you know.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's all part of the learning process, you know.
Yeah. So you're in for the treat tonight, folks. Sit back, relax, take as many notes as you can. Let's get down to it. So you've had plenty of achievements, Ross.
Yeah, look, I've had plenty of mishaps as well, but I believe that you got to enjoy the journey. You know, it's not about getting to a destination saying I'll be finally happy. You know, I suppose I went to college and did computer science, and then I did a postgrad in business after that. And I was fortunate enough to come back in the early 2000s when, you know, the economy was on fire and there was lots of American tech money floating around the place. And I just went into an industry that I really loved and I had a kind of a fluency in it and I did well. I probably got a bit ahead of myself in my career and kind of took on whatever was thrown at me at the time and learned some hard lessons there as well. But then had the good fortune of, you know, joining some pretty great companies thereafter and learning and, you know, dealing with politics and all that comes with those companies as well. But, you know, what's great about what I like about working for the Americans is there's a process for everything. They have the playbook. And, you know, if you follow the rules and you work hard, you're going to see a good output. It's really clear. There's no ambiguity. If you play the game and you work hard and you put in the time and effort, you know, there's reward out the back of that, you know, and they're really to really encourage that. And, you know, that does well for us.
So you've seen a lot of these companies grown from zero right up. And in the tech world as well, I think it's the tech world over the last few years is very, very profitable world. We get a lot of people in through the door that's involved in the tech industry, and they seem to have a lot of in their pocket.
I think Ireland, if you strip it back and you zoom out for a bit, and if you look at Ireland, if you remember, you know, I'm a child of the 80s. You know, I remember when the country had nothing.
Yeah.
We did have a we had a great education system. But we really didn't have anything to offer anybody graduating except a plane ticket, you know. So you had this kind of concept of the brain drain. And I think, to be fair, without getting into the politics of it, we really did marry the whole idea of highly educated workforce, the English language, gateway to Europe, with what, you know, foreign direct investment was doing. And, you know, one of the government agencies I do have a bit of respect for is the IDA, where they actually do a good job of bringing jobs into the country. And I think there's two industries that suit well in that. It's pharmaceuticals and technology.
Yeah.
Because it's based around law. And Ireland has, you know, there's plenty of other economies, and by the way, in Europe as well, which have a lower tax rate than us. And a lot of people don't know that. You know, we have this name as a tax haven and whatever. And I absolutely refute that, because qualifications for a tax haven are that you have secrecy.
Yeah.
We don't. We have transparency. Yeah. We're a member of the European Union, and it's completely open as to what the law is. And we have the idea of the concept of law, and it's very black and white. You know, if you go to court, you'll get an outcome that's fair and equitable. And we just brought all of those things together with a workforce that was ready. And now we have net migration into the country because people want to come here from all around Europe.
Yeah.
For that reason. And I think that's good. You know, that's the deal we did to get jobs, and it worked.
It's working well.
Yeah.
All right. So take me back a little bit. So you are married, obviously, a little bit about your...
Yeah, married 14 years, three great kids that try my patience, as they all do, but I wouldn't change it for the world. Absolutely. Yeah.
Lovely. And you're going to then, you're obviously pushing into the property field as well.
Yeah.
You have a lot going on in all aspects of life with kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Work, the consultancy, and then property on the side too.
Yeah, look, and I think one of the things, we're heading away for the weekend, actually, I think you've got to take time out every couple of months and just take stock, because you'd be driven mad otherwise, you know. I was absolutely wiped coming home today, you know, and that's often the case, you know. But I think the property thing for me is really a good store of wealth, because as well as you can do in your work and life, unfortunately, I've seen plenty of friends and family who thought the gravy train would go on forever, and then suddenly they've no work, or a sickness, or, you know, God forbid, some sort of terminal illness happens, which I've seen happen many times, and there's nothing left.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I never thought this would happen, you know. So I think for me, it's really an insurance policy. It's looking after the future and generational wealth. You got to balance off, you know, you want to make sure your kids aren't, you know, doing fuck all.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
But you need to have a box off, you know, you need to be able to enjoy, you know, later in life. And to be honest with you, it's not about getting to a stage where if this happens, then I'll be happy. It's a matter of like enjoying that journey as well. There's a good bit of like... The way you guys work in Platinum, you promote the idea of the hustle quite a bit.
Yeah.
That's the exciting bit.
Yeah.
In getting the win. Like, it's not, I know this is going to sound mad, but like in work, in what I do and in closing business, I get as much a kick out of closing 10 grand as I do 100 grand.
Yeah.
Like, it's actually fun. Doesn't matter. Yeah. It's the win that matters. Do you know? It's the journey along the way. So.
And that's what we're going to be diving into a lot tonight about the sales, because, again, going back to what you just said there, we promote a lot of the hustle. We do. And sometimes before we kick in now to sales, because I know we're going to have a big day on sales tonight, which I absolutely love too. But I often say at our meetings, our monthly meeting, our weekly meetings, if we stop with this fucking hustle shit and tell people it's all easy peasy, our sales will go through the roof. But unfortunately, we're born and bred in Talla. We know not to con people and tell them, well, look, this is the road. It's quite difficult, but you can get there. Anyone can get there. And I don't put in this shiny piece to it that is well known throughout other parts of, well, I won't say Ireland, but especially in England.
Yeah.
You know, that you have a property, you have a Lambo, you have a Ferrari, you have several different things. And I'm like, well, you need a quite bit more property in Ireland to get all these things. So we do promote the hustle probably a bit more, and it affects the sales.
It's interesting you say it. I was listening to a podcast recently. I think it was Chris I can't remember exactly which one it was, but they were talking about the lifestyle that you see on Instagram. And you'd be guaranteed more follows if you have the Lambos and the Vegas casinos and all that sort of stuff. But if you're actually genuine, the most impressive wealthy people I've ever come across or you hear about, you actually don't hear about. They're under a rock somewhere.
Yeah.
Because they don't have the flashy lifestyle. And I think there's a lot to be said for that, you know? But that's not the Instagram world, you know?
Instagram world is a painful world.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get into it a little bit because you're an absolute expert when it comes to sales, marketing, probably persuasion. And I mean, when people think of sales, they think, oh, here we go. Here's the salesman, the big shiny suits. They're going to try and sell me some shit. But really a good salesman can sell you anything. And he doesn't have to put too much effort in because he's put a lot of work into his own self or his own belief or maybe they're so far behind the product that they're selling, it's a gift to them. They know that they can pull it off in a certain way.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's an interesting one. And the first thing I like to do when I talk about sales is there's a lot of misconceptions about this. I mean, like the guy I work with right now, who's my boss, who was my first ever boss when I was in Dell and I was 24 years of age, said to me, it was kind of a training session. And he came into the room and he said, people have this perception that sales guys are in this pinstripe suits with the gel back hair and the briefcase and they're talking the talk and they've the gift of the gab. And I think we were saying before we started here, you don't go into the delivery ward in Crumlin or in James's Hospital and they go, congratulations, you've a salesman here in front of you. You're not born with this kind of ability. And as was said to me in that room that day, people think that you are that persona, but actually I know plenty of people who wouldn't say boo to you in the hallway. Mm. But by God, can they sell? And I give you an example. There's two people on my team at the moment, both of whom aren't native English speakers and are the best salespeople on the team.
Aye.
And they're the best salespeople on the team because they listen, they're coachable, they actually enact what they're taught, and they really ask cool questions. It's a 2-to-1 or a 3-to-1 ratio of asking questions versus listening to what's said and playing that back as to what people are looking for. It's not persuading somebody, because somebody persuaded against their will is of the same opinion still. I really believe that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's people buy a solution. They don't buy I see you have a drill here under the desk here, right? People aren't buying a drill. They're buying the hole in the wall.
Yeah.
And it's about understanding what that looks like and painting a picture of where that is.
How many companies do you reckon, through not training their staff properly, are not being able to deal with like one phone call, say, coming into an office upstairs or to a care officer? How many companies do you reckon there are in Ireland that, because their ignorance to sales and marketing, you know, or just we'll hand it over to the sales agency or we'll hand it over to a colleague.
You're losing control then.
Yeah, well, you do. You definitely do.
Yeah.
How much money do you reckon they're losing from their ignorance to teaching their staff how to sell? Like, in my opinion, this is that if I'm going to buy something and I'll give you one example. When we were getting married, we originally went over to Nerka, and beautiful place. Sun was shining. Mom and dad were there. Her mom and dad were there. It was fantastic. Picked the venue, picked the spa. And for some reason or other, I was coming back in the plane and I said, no, it's not for me. Not the wedding.
Yeah.
It was just the place. Tara loved it. And I just thought to myself, this will be a disaster. If my little lad kicks off and has an episode or runs wild for the week and we're in the sun and we're baked and we're in suits, I just seen all this red. And I had to try and say to Tara, look, we'll go back to Ireland and we'll pick a lovely venue. But unfortunately, I just can't get my head around all of these things might happen. They mightn't happen. But if they do happen, be a fucking disaster. And I don't want that for our wedding.
I'm really surprised you were a decision maker in that process.
I know. This is I'm only thinking back now. But it leads me into a fantastic thing that happened. So we'd gone to loads of hotels then. And I was like, fuck, I'll just pay a little bit more because I sort of fucked this thing up where, you know, I have to make it up now. And hotels weren't ringing us back. We were going into hotels. We're like, this is that. And I was like, in my mind, going, fucking hell, like we're talking about a 40 or 50 grand wedding here and they're treating us like a piece of shit.
Yeah.
I'm not having my wedding here.
Yeah.
We rang up Druids Glen. I'm telling you, from the first phone call, we were treated like a king and queen. We ended up having our wedding there. Great, great wedding. Fantastic experience. But it was all done through a sale. It was the very, very, very first point of contact that we had with the person. And then the way we were treated when we got there, we were just sold. I said, I don't care what this is. We're having a wedding here. This is top notch.
You buy with emotion, you justify with logic.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting experience. So there's a couple of things I would say around that. So you were asking about how much is left on the table. I don't think anyone really, in the main, looks at their funnel as well. I think that's a really important thing. There's two funnels. There's a marketing funnel and a sales funnel, and they're quite different. And there's a handover between one and the other. So you've got to look at what are your leads coming in, the top of the funnel. So tofu, as they call it, mofu, middle of the funnel and bottom of the funnel. And there's different types of leads. And we can go into that if you want. Yeah. And then there's a handover where it becomes a sales qualified lead. And then you've got to look at your kind of decision process, which is the typical IBM one is BANT, which is budget, authority, need and timeline. And there's a more recent one, which has come in kind of consultative selling, which is called MEDIC, which is metrics, economic buyer, decision maker, decision process or paper process, implications of pain and competition. Yeah. So like they're all quite relevant to the story you just told. And I think what's interesting as well is how you were treated during the sale. I deal in the corporate world with a lot of people who are buying software on a regular basis. And there's a kind of a perception that, I should be allowed to use this for free. I should be allowed to trial this for free. Because the perception might be, well, you're actually selling thin air, really. No, you're not really selling anything. It's a subscription on a computer screen, really. So it's all about creation of value.
Yeah.
So and for me, it's all about, if I was in that process, you have to treat people well and with respect. But it's also about a learning process. They want to learn about you as a couple, I'd imagine. They want to learn about what do you envisage, how your guests going to feel. Like that's what I'd be amping up in that process. What does a good day look like for you? And shut the hell up.
Yeah.
And let people talk and listen to every single word they say. But I think in my game, it's a lot of it's about give and get. I say no to people a lot as well. Can we have this? Can we have that? Can we have that? And I'm like, we can explore those together, but what does that mean for you? And a lot of it's, you know, false objections and all that kind of stuff. So you've got to set a precedent for it. Well, if I can do those things for you, I can get you those things, but where are we in the decision process? Where are we working towards, et cetera? Now, wedding's a bit different because it's much more emotive and I don't want to equate the two, but I think it's very much a process. You have to kind of, you have to gauge. So you're coming off the back of a bad experience, which is probably going to set the stage for you're in a good spot already, do you know? You know where you stand and what other wedding venues would be important to you that they've offered you? And what would be a reason you might choose them over us?
Yeah.
You know, and understand that. No, we really like you. Okay, so tick, 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 and confirmation. And getting a no is actually really powerful.
Because
you know where you spend your time, et cetera, as well. So I think, you know, it's about relationship. It's about the skill of building that rapport. It's about qualifying out. And qualifying in, because a lot of what we do, like we would close somewhere between 20% and 40% of the people we speak to.
Okay, and are you closing them from first point of contact, or is it like
absolutely not?
Give us a sort of a ratio there for many points, because even when I'm trying to teach people in the middle of our university, we have a sales part. I'm like, what the fuck's this here in a university? And I'm like, well, if you can't,
not convince, but if you can't.
Sell your business or sell the product of what you're doing, which is buying houses fast.
Yeah.
Or at least talking to those people and getting them to talk back to you. You are not going to be in this business too long. You know, you have to be able to communicate properly. So give us a type of how many times in a sales funnel would you have hit someone or touched them?
Yeah. So people, you know, I often ask, well, what's the goal of marketing? And people will say, well, to sell something. Wrong. It's absolutely not. The goal of marketing is to earn the right to have a conversation. It's to pique interest, to show a ton of value up front, but you've got someone's attention and you earn the right to have a conversation because you've acquired usually their email address and or phone number.
Yeah.
So, for example, in your case, it's having the free property bootcamp, the one day, the half day. So we're going to educate you. We're going to teach you a ton of strategies that you could go off and you know, do yourself, quite frankly. Or if you want to move this forward, we'll have a conversation with you about how we can actually help you walk you through this in a hand-holding kind of fashion. So it's a bit like what I talk about is the going to Dr. Freud, you know, it's going to the psychologist and saying, I've all these problems. He's lying back in the series long saying, I've all these problems. And he's going, oh yeah, he's writing them down, right? Saying, okay. And so, well, I have a solution to all those problems. And by the way, I'm the pharmacy too, and I can write you a prescription, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's that kind of mentality. Don't be ever afraid, particularly today, because what used to happen back in, you know, the 50s and 60s, and, you know, the encyclopedia sales days and, you know, knocking on doors, that was hardcore selling because there was no marketing to be had. It's literally driving around the place, knocking on doors and telling people your wares and trying to get a sale. Those days are gone. You can go into any electrical retailer now and you'll know more about the washing machine you're about to buy than the guy selling it to you.
Because
you can just go and bring up your phone and compare it to three other places and you can go, well, I've Harvey Norman DID and I've Arnott's and I've wherever else and they're all selling the same one. This is the price, what I can do. So, you know, the days of that information is now freely available. So you've moved the conversation way further down the funnel. So the obligation then on marketers becomes, I need to show way more value up front here. And I have to be willing and comfortable to give this away for free.
Yeah.
But actually what I'm selling is the relationship and the engagement and the hand-holding. And like your value is in your network.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
In the folks you put people in touch with. So it's all about that experience. So you asked me about how many touches. It depends on the business. In what I do at the moment, we have different lead categorizations based on where they're coming in. So and based on what they're doing. So are they reading something on the website? Are they looking at an ebook? Are they watching a video? Or are they actually asking for a demo? Because they're all wildly different things. They're all less qualified. Somebody's window shopping is somebody you're going to need to nurture, send emails, add value, drive social media, give additional what I call marketing assets. The first thing you need to do is have an audit of all your marketing assets. Or if you don't have them, get them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So are they downloads? Are they ebooks? Are they videos? Are they, you know, podcasts? Are they kind of assessment sessions, audits, that type of thing? And then what are the paths in between all of those to warm them up? And then can you implement maybe lead scoring as well? I don't want to go too into much to the weeds here, but, you know, if somebody, you know, there's X points for that one, there's Y points for that one, there's Z points for that one. And if they hit all of those, then maybe it's something I would reach out to and have a conversation with. And then you need to have a sales process. So if somebody rings in and says, hey, I saw about this. Great. Okay. So what we personally do is we have like discovery calls, which is a get to know you type of what's your actual pain. And we would run through the medic process, which is what are your metrics? Where are you falling down at the moment? And tell me about that.
Yeah. And use the ears that God gave you.
Exactly. Because it's too tempting to, and a lot of it's about, there's a great guy called Jeremy Lee Miner, who's on Instagram, who talks about raising your status as a salesperson, because quite often as a salesperson, you can feel subservient to the prospect or the buyer because they're demanding all this stuff. And you're like, my time's valuable. And it's about getting that across subtly and saying, you know, I speak to a lot of people, often they have this. What's motivating you to change now? Like, why now? What are the impacts? What the biggest competition we face in what we do day to day is doing nothing.
So people taking in the information, sitting back and then going, I'll come back to it again.
Yeah, I'll think about it. I'll think it over. Okay, so you're thinking it over. If you're thinking it over there, what criteria are you using to evaluate this? And when you go and speak to other people, what would be a reason you would go with them? Let's assume our price is the same. What are the decision criteria that you're unsure of that we haven't covered today?
And would you be trying to make sure you've got a decision maker on board? Or would you be, like, throughout your discovery call, you're obviously figuring out.
Absolutely.
And this is crucial for small business owners that is listening to this show. I mean, if you can't understand the sale process in your company, you need to pause whatever you're doing and really fucking zone in on this, because this could be you making the extra 100 grand that you need to survive this year or losing 250 grand and going, wonder what the problem is. Well, the problem is always marketing and it's always sales.
Yeah.
You just don't, you,
nothing you've happens in your, the economy without a sale.
Exactly. And maybe you've completely just zoned out in this because it's been easy before. Now it's got a little bit challenging and you've just left the sales over to Sharon in the office that is making it.
And how many calls is Sharon doing? How many of them is she qualifying? How many is she taking beyond a discovery process to a demo? And how many of them are going to, you asked a question about decision makers. So it's probably my biggest pet peeve, right? And this applies to people running in the B2B and B2C space in a big way. Yeah. So a lot of the time I'm in the B2B space. And a lot of the time we're speaking to non-decision makers initially anyway. Yeah. So if the project gets legs, you want to say, right, who else might we want to include in this process to ensure that we've executive priorities aligned and that the impact of the business is such that it makes sense for you to have a commercial discussion with us and move forward. So what you're trying to do there is that the person that you're speaking with will have criteria around things like, in my game, usability, making sure, you know, it does the job day to day. Their boss doesn't give a hell of a shit about that.
Yeah.
They care about what's the impact of the business. How quickly does this improve our workflow? Does this improve what we do day to day? Those guys buy for one of two reasons. It saves me dollars or it makes me dollars. Yeah. Simple. That's it.
Makes it go faster. The engine.
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. And then in a domestic kind of B2C situation, whoever you're talking to, the way I would get around that, it's usually the husband or the wife that you're speaking to, and it's usually the other partner that are either decision maker. The person on the phone will tell you they're the decision maker. Yeah. They may not be.
Yeah, usually they don't be.
Yeah, and usually they're not. Yeah, exactly. So you've got to get around that in an awkward way. And the way you do that is with like a positioning statement. You would say, this is a great conversation we've had about, you know, retrofitting your houses and sewing your new windows and quite frankly, gutting your downstairs. I'd love to do that. For me, this would be something, it's a project I have done in the past. In my house, as much as I like to pretend and do a merry dance that I'm the decision maker, we all know it's my wife.
Yeah.
So she would want to be involved in this conversation. How does that look for you?
Yeah.
And so they'll
ask it outright.
Yeah, and ask it outright. And, yeah. And they'll say to you, "And okay, well, what kind of questions are he or she going to ask back that we need to talk about in our next discussion? And when can we get a time with those guys? Mm-hmm. You have your calendar, pull it up right now and we'll go through what those are important. I'm going to actually do some prep work. So when they come on the call, I'll know what they're looking for and be able to address them there and then."
So that leads me in then to another question as well, because I think it is about, number one, increasing your flows, increasing your income, and making sure the decision makers around when you're trying to get a decision done. Because the last thing you want to do as a salesman is keep going back and back over the same.
Yeah.
So, and usually what I've seen as well, especially because 5 years in business now, and in this business, I'm in business since I'm 18, I know the peaks and troughs
of
customers. And even when we have a sales process going on, they're like, "No one's buying." And I'm like, no, you're looking at that wrong. They're all going to buy eventually.
Yeah.
You just have not given them enough information for them to buy. So it's your problem. It's not theirs. It's your problem. And yeah, sometimes people in my own office don't even understand that. And I'm thinking, well, how much information do you give them? I talked to them Wednesday. I'm talking to them Thursday. Talk to them again.
And what was the objective of the Wednesday's call? So you, like, this is the thing people don't get. It's like, if I'm going to pick up the phone to someone and have a call, what's the outcome? What's the piece of information you're missing that you're ringing them for?
Yeah.
Like Jeremy Lee Miner talks about this, where he's like, the worst thing you can do is use a cliche like, "Hey, just checking in.
Yeah.
I'll circle back with you.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks for circling back. Great.
People are so busy. They don't just circle and back you. They want to understand exactly why you're ringing them again on the Wednesday.
"Hey, Paul, coming back to you, had a few moments in my day, wanted to make sure I grabbed you. I appreciate you're busy. Reason for the call is I know you had concerns around the following aspects of what we talked about in your wedding. Want you to let you know I've done this, this, and this. How does this further progress our conversation? And when might we be looking so I can ensure?" And the other thing to do is, like, I use this all the time, is scarcity. We actually have 3 wedding slots for next month, but we have 6 applications. I want to make sure I prioritize your application. What do I need to be doing in the background to ensure we have one of those slots held for you?
And see, now for me, being the buyer there, I naturally think I've got someone looking after me here.
Yeah.
They're the best of their knowledge. They're not trying to sell. They haven't tried to sell me anything. They've literally he's out now to look after me. He's not giving me all this, take it. Because he wants to run back into his boss and say, "I've got the sale. I've got the commission. I've got whatever he's getting out of it." But me, the buyer, I want to know I'm being looked after. I want to know that he's got me. He's going to look after me. When I ring him in with a list of shit, he's going to make sure it's done. And this is my guy that I want.
And sales guys also need to be selfish too. And, you know, sales guys are paid on commission. And anyone who doesn't pay their sales guys on commissions is naive, quite frankly, because that's what motivates them. That's the way the world works. Look, commission-only salespeople in the US are phenomenally successful. They're hungry.
Yeah.
But I think the other misconception about sales is it's about telling people how good your product is.
Mm.
Your product has to be good.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're wasting your time, right? Yeah. There's no point in selling something that's a dud. The reality is it might have a quirk here and there that's better than somebody else. But once you go down the road of features and benefits,
yeah,
you're done.
So I'm looking in at a company, might even give them a shout out. I think I will. One of our own guys, he just flashed in my head a minute ago. So let's just say Robbie's company, Homology, fantastic retrofit company.
Yeah.
Great growth in there. Great, like this, he really understands what he's doing.
Yeah.
Fully behind it. Let's just say that you had consulted him to teach someone how to sell in his company. Because he's got like 50 lads refurb and he's got all them different things done. But if he actually seen an actual pipeline for business properly, mentally in your head, because business owners, as you know, and you've done small companies, you've done bigger companies, we have to do fucking everything.
Yeah, yeah, of course. And
I can sell today, but tomorrow if I'm out trying to fix them, I still need that pipeline full.
Yeah.
And I need it being full with the right people. But again, if he's trying to do everything, or I'm trying to do everything in my company, or you're trying to do in your company, and that process isn't in place, at some point the business is going to go dry.
Yeah.
So like the likes of you stepping in there and consulting someone and showing them the actual way of filling that pipeline, these companies can turn, like, because what they're offering, we need.
Yeah.
You just need to find the customer and how to find the customer and how to deliver it in a certain way that you win it. Because the other company that's your competitor here, if he's out there stepping someone like you in to train his staff, he's going to fucking win.
Yeah.
And naturally, you're going to be like, well, I've better men. My teams are better. It doesn't give a shit. They've just done something over here. They understand the sales process.
Yeah.
And their money is going to start to come in like rainwater. It's just going to keep
going. I agree with you. Yeah, I'll touch on the training piece for a minute. I've been very fortunate in my career that I've gone through a lot of like really, really solid training, like Pro Coach and Sandler Selling and Medic more recently, etc. You know, there's the Challenger Sale. There's tons of books you can read out there. They're all good, right? But it's about having a process. I mean, the whole thing about sales is, you know, the sales guy go, or the CEO goes, the CFO go, can we have some money to train the staff, you know? Well, what if we train them and they leave? But what if we don't train them and they fucking stay? Yeah. You know, that's worse. That's the situation you're describing.
Yeah.
You know, and if somebody's willing to leave, you know, you've done something wrong as well. You know, that's a whole other thing as well. But I think to come back to particularly, you know, in the group there, Robbie's business, he's selling scarcity as well because he's a pipeline. And he's only a certain amount of delivery he can do.
Yeah.
So he can use that to his advantage. The way I would sell that business would be a couple of things. He's thinking about the older generation satin houses that are freezing.
Absolutely.
Retrofitting house, like some of the work he does that he puts up on social is really impactful. Yeah. It's really kind of and people buy with emotion and justify with logic. Remember that. So you've got your older person sat there in the cold, you know, you grade it all out and then you transform, you're really selling the warmth.
Mm.
And I think the other thing as well about that business is the amount, when you see the assessment that he does, that's your Dr. Freud moment. That's your going and getting your kind of your prescription almost written out.
I start going out and getting mine then assessed. I was like, fucking hell, this is great. All because he approached it in that way.
And it's phenomenal, the energy that goes into heating, right? That's the conversation. It's 35,000 kilowatt, whatever, to heat it now, which, you know, you're heating the draft versus a tenth of that in some cases for bringing it up to an A.
Mm.
You know, that's phenomenal. And then the new grants that are available as well, where there's the low interest rate loans from some of the bigger, I know PTSB have done it, and then I think the other ones are rolling it out.
Yeah, they're all backing on. Like, that market again is going to be really competitive now because high interest rates have come in.
Yeah.
Now they're all struggling. Interest rates are going to start going down, as we all know. Thank God.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they're also going to be backed now towards Robbie's world. It was, okay, if your home is a B2, this is what we're going to give you. So it's going to all kick in. And
absolutely. Tell me about your problems. You know, tell me, why is it so cold in your house? Oh, well, this, the rest. What are the implications day to day? You're coming in a December morning or a December evening. What would good look like to you when you have an outcome you're looking for? And shut the hell up and listen to them.
Yeah. And I'm a true believer as well with a sale. And something that I've done because I've studied this. I'm selling since I'm, I think, about 6 or 7 years old. So I've been told to fuck off loads of times.
Sure, go away.
It doesn't, you know, I truly believe you just haven't given enough information that what you're selling is good enough. But again, if you're selling that type of business, and I'm only thinking of that business, there's like 100 other businesses in our company, and in our network, that if they would have put a consultant in there to teach them how to sell, their stuff will look a million times better. Their bank accounts will naturally look better. But again, if you show someone that, and the way I would show that as well is, let's just say that this ball of cash is in your bank and it's 50,000.
Yeah.
And if you explain to someone clearly, well, with that 50,000, we can solve this problem, that problem, and this problem. And what it's going to look like for you is, remember last year you walked up the stairs at 11 o'clock at night and you blow that cold out? It's gone.
Yeah.
You're going to be warm. You're not going to sit there like heat shivering on the back of the room. This is what we're guaranteeing you. I think for me, when I'm buying something, if they can show me the value in what they're selling me properly, and we all know a good salesman, if they can show that to me properly, that that's worth more than the notes that are in my pocket, I'm buying.
Yeah. And that's the reason you're creating what's called inertia. So, I mean, it's the biggest competition you'll face is doing nothing. I mean, that's literally it. So it's like, asking that question, what would motivate you to get there to where you need to be? You know, you're sat in the warm house, et cetera. How does that make you and your family feel?
Yeah. So sales, really, really important. And we're going to try and go into sales, marketing. We'll talk about you a bit more again at the end. And then we need to try and bring it back a little bit into, if someone, because a lot of people now are going to be going into their offices in the morning or when this podcast gets released and going, I'm changing your position to your position. But let's just say that you have trained someone.
Yeah.
Right. And you've trained, I'm going to say Tara, right?
Yeah.
Someone, Rosie or whoever it is in my office, Ozzy's saying him. And you obviously must have to be able to train people, or you must have to know when to close a deal.
Yeah.
Because you can have the best product, you can have the best sales team delivering that product, but if that person that's selling the product doesn't know when the close is there, how do you teach someone, how do you explain that process to someone to say, now you have to go for the close?
It's a great question.
Close the business out.
It's got a couple of things I would ask there as well. And some of the work I'm doing at the moment with some really phenomenal companies who have an amazing product of no process behind it. So you've got to have a CRM.
Yeah.
I had a VP of sales who was my boss quite some time ago. Relatively useless, if I'm honest. But what you expect what you inspect, right?
Yeah.
Meaning that if you're not checking it, it's not getting done, quite frankly. So what that looks like is in our businesses, you have an SQL, which is sales qualified lead, which is that kind of handover between marketing and sales. It's ready to be sold to. And that's where it's missing one of BANT, so budget, authority, need, or timeline. And then beyond that, if you have those, then you're going into a deeper qualification, which is like a discovery process, which is, and then it's post-discovery, then you're saying, okay, well, do we have another inflection point? Like, do we have some sort of a site visit? Do we have some sort of a try before you buy? Do we have some sort of connection physically, if it's B2B, et cetera, in terms of data flow? And then it becomes kind of an upside deal. So meaning that you're not sure if it's callable within a time frame. Yeah. You have a decision maker, but you don't have the fact that they're ready to buy and when. And then you have like what's called best case, which is they've told you your vendor a choice. They've told you they can move. They haven't told you when. And then you have a commit deal. And a commit deal is hell or high water. That deal's happening and it's happening within this time frame.
Yeah.
Because you've checked all of those boxes and you've asked all of those good questions. Now, the phenomenal thing about software today, there's an unbelievable company called Gong.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of them, but basically they'll plug into your Zoom calls. And with AI, so the big gap, just let me wind back for a second here. CRM was the big talk of the 90s and early 2000s. Guys like Salesforce effectively wrote the book on this, right? So it's this idea of actually tracking your relationship in a sale. So from contact acquisition to told them this, had this conversation, sent them a quote, and then you can start to measure your volume. You can start to track all of that. Had a phone call with them, said the following, right? The problem with it is you don't know if that sales guy's spoofing or not.
Yeah.
You don't know if they're accurately capturing what was actually said. Oh, they told me Jamie was the decision maker and Mary signs the POs and blah, blah, blah. And then you go, well, listen, Bill, why isn't this deal closing? You have all the information. Gong gets rid of all that. And what it does is records the call in the background and uses AI to strip out all of that stuff. It's listening for all of the things that you have in your sales criteria. And it's actually saying, well, based on what was said on the call, when it was said with those people, based on what deals we've closed in that space over that period of time, in that sales cycle with that lead type, we can forecast this deal accurately. So that's where you're getting into serious pieces of tech. Now, that's not always needed, right? That's overkill. And that's where you have the nice problem to solve a big volume and you have a gap in the middle and the bottom of your funnel. Mm-hmm. So you have great awareness and you have great conversations happening, but ain't nothing getting closed.
Yeah.
So, but that takes away the ambiguity of what's said on calls. And then you can go, well, you didn't ask this question on that call, so you need to ring them back and the purpose of your next call. So it becomes entirely tangible. There's nowhere to hide now with software.
Yeah. Right, so that's a big
game changer, yeah.
Yeah, that's stripping out then a lot of the crap that may be sent in on a call. Because again, I've seen sales teams work really hard. Like I've been in boiler rooms,
yeah.
And them boys are beast.
Yeah,
like they're able to do a couple of hundred calls a day. I've been on the phones for many years, and 15 calls later, I'm fucking shattered. I'm like done. Can't. You know,
and like you're expected to do 80, 90 dials a day sometimes, you know.
Yeah, that's well, no they joke. Say you're 2,000 calls away from multimillionaire with the right product. And again, you've got a company out there, you have to, if your staff are doing 10 calls a day and they're like, yeah, no results in them 10 calls, you need to sellotape that phone to their hand and not let them out of the office till they do 300 calls. All right, so then the closing part.
Yep.
You have to distinguish. How do you distinguish it's there? Are you waiting for the client to go, right, I'm in. I've had enough. Okay. I'm done. Are you like, so for me, again, in a property deal, and if I get to the end, and I'm probably giving away my trade secrets here, but I will let them now panic. They know we've got the money. They know we've got what they want.
Yeah.
I've let them tell me what they want inside a sale.
Yeah.
And then I'll pull back.
Yeah.
Now that pullback can be dangerous. I'll only do that. I will literally use to pull out. I'll pull back at the very last minute and just say, caught now on calls for a week or two. And they're like, what the fuck is he talking about? I will pull back to really ramp it. Like,
yeah, I think that's quite an effective strategy. And like on the sales side of the house, you can do that as well. I suppose I've gone from selling, you know, hardware and physical goods to selling software, which is really just an idea. That's all it is. And the kind of natural inclination, selling is not selling. And what I mean by that is, like I talked about earlier, about information being readily available. You know, going on and saying, we have this, that, and the rest of it. We're the greatest, blah, 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 blah. People are so jaded by that. They're not interested. One of the most powerful things you can do in a sales process is say no to a prospect. I don't think we're a good fit for each other. What do you mean we're not a good?
Yeah.
And then they have to justify, well, we are because we talked about this. But we haven't moved forward. I'm really worried.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if this is done skillfully and well, you know, for example, hiya, Mary, we spoke for a number of weeks. I'm concerned we put a lot of effort into our engagement. We talked about getting your house upgraded. We talked about insulating this. I've tried to reach you a number of different times. I think at this point, it's probably best we break up and go our separate ways if it's okay with you, because I'm not sure I can add value and we're going to get this over the line to where you said you wanted to be. So if it's okay with you, we'll just move on. Now, that'll do one of two things, right? That's a scary thing to do because you're like, but what if they buy?
Yeah, and it's all
guild and it's like, oh, but I just need this one sale and then I'm out of the poorhouse or whatever, right? That mentality, forget it, right? But what you'll do is she'll either do one of two things. She'll either go, do you know what? I've been unfair to you. I should have given you an honest opinion. I've been away on holiday, but actually I'm ready to go talk to the bank yesterday. We're ready to execute on this. And we're actually, so look, I have a spot in 3 weeks' time. Should I be holding it for you? Because what you're doing there is you're valuing your time. It's like, I only have slots here.
Yeah.
You know, you can have it or you don't. Like, it doesn't matter to me. I'm moving on. Like, if you, the minute you say, I could take this or leave it, I'm not desperate for your business. Then you're in control.
Yeah.
Then you're in control. And or she could say, yeah, no, that's fine. We're going to buy anyway. Now you've just saved yourself a bunch of heartache and time on someone that's never going to buy. And by the way, not buying is a perfectly acceptable outcome.
Yeah.
No is my second favorite answer. But like, you know, if we're going to get into an engagement, I want to learn this early. You know, often people get busy, things happen in the middle. If we're a good fit for you and we're able to provide a value and a service that you feel would add the value that you've come here to me and explained to me, what would we do? Oh, we'd move forward. Okay. Well, if we decide together that we're not a good fit, is it okay if we go our separate ways? Mm. Now, you've given them an out there.
Yeah.
So you've set the expectation that, hey, you know, if this is not a fit, and the time to call that in is at the close.
Yeah.
Hey, we had a conversation at the beginning where you said that if we weren't a fit for each other, that it would be okay if we went our separate ways. Are we at that point right now?
Mm-hmm.
That's a clarifying question. So that will say, and now, to be honest with you, Paul, people don't often like being accountable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Particularly to what they said, which is even more powerful. It's not what you said. Mm-hmm. It's what they told you. You told me, where should we go from here? Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that for you, the one thing that God gave us all equally was time. And where you decide to spend it is absolutely crucial. I want to be spending with people who are biting my arm off.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And for the ones that are on the fence, I'm like, I'm pulling back. I'm like, this isn't for you. We spent a lot of time and effort. And I would have no problem if I'm not talking to a decision maker, sending an email with CC and the CEO.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know, they said this to me because if they're around kicking my tires all day, wasting my time, I want the CEO to know about it. This is not to be difficult or vindictive or bad to somebody. It's just I want them to be accountable for what they're doing there.
Absolutely.
You know, so I could talk to you all day about that part because it's nuanced.
Well, you can
to
obviously train someone to say, that's there now. That's the point I'm trying to get to. The point I'm trying to get is, so whoever you're doing a bit of consultancy with or just a small team of five, like there has to be a certain point in this training that you can go, guys, did you hear what he said? Now he now needs what you have.
Exactly.
And if they can see that.
Budget, authority, need, and timeline. So if you've ticked those boxes and you've said to me, you're coming to me now, you couldn't have done it 6 months ago, you can't do it 6 months from now. You've told me that you have the budget available. You've told me there's definitely a need and you've told me you're the authority person to make that decision. Where do we need to go? So if I sent you the paperwork this afternoon, when would you be at a computer that would be convenient for you to sign that or do it on your phone? The other thing as well, and Amazon and Bezos talk about, Grant Cardone talks about this.
Yeah.
They've made it ridiculously easy for that part, right? So you need to make bloody sure whatever you do, the paperwork part is a walk in the park.
So that's part of the system too that you
100%.
So it's not going to be confusing the fuck where you just go, it's too much now.
So Robbie's getting a ton of free value off this, right? But I'm going to bring it back to him again, right?
So important because
it's vital.
Like if you're not focused on this shit, like I absolutely love sales and I love marketing and I truly believe I'm well able to close anyone in business or in buying a business. But again, the amount of companies that I speak to and I'm like, holy shit. You could have had a sale there. And that could be a set of windows. That could be a new doors going in. That could be, if some staff in that office does that 15 times a year, that could equate to €1 million.
100%.
I'm like, what the fuck aren't you training these people for?
How many people are coming in or inquiring? How many initial screen calls are discovery calls are you doing? How many, qualification and closing calls are you doing? And how many deals are you closing? Because the ultimate, if you're looking to sell your business, they're going to sure as shit want to know about stuff because that's the repeatable part. So if I'm selling the retrofit again, I'm like, okay, Mary, I'm just going to send you, while we're on the phone here now, are you popping me on speaker or are you at a computer? I'm going to send you the documentation through. Do you have it there? Okay. Do you see the DocuSign? Could you just click the button on the bottom for me there? Great. Mm-hmm. Now what's going to happen is I'm going to send you a text message that's confirming your date and time for the 3-week slot that we spoke about. What's going to happen on that day is 3 days before you're going to get a text message with all of the people that are going to arrive. We're also going to need preparation done on the house. Mm-hmm. We're going to need a key left out to get in the front door. We're going to make sure the electrics are gone off. We're going to make sure the plumbing's gone off.
That's the system.
Now I'm setting up the expectation.
Yeah.
So what happens next? Three different things kick off in a workflow.
Yeah.
But that should all be automated.
Yeah,
so you're
making
it super easy for me. Okay, you have it on your phone. Great. Okay, brilliant. I know in 3 weeks' time that this is going to happen. I know that I'm going to get this text. They've painted the picture. They're already there.
Yeah. So you're taking the sale from a point of contact to the end. And in the process, you have completely put in all the procedures in there to make everything go according to plan.
That's what
that
I
it makes it so simple, which I think a lot of people don't understand. Because I'm looking at two different companies now and I know for a fact, one of the companies that I'm thinking about, I'm not going to name them because they're not my network, but one of the companies has all that shit.
Yeah.
Somebody has said, stop what you're doing, come into the boardroom, here's what we're doing. He's teaching me. And yeah. and I know they have that system. The other company is a better company. And he is just, there's shit going all over the place. Nothing's trackable. You ring in, can't say her name. She'll pick up the phone. She's scratching her head. She's a bad hangover. And their sales are diminishing. And he's saying, why the fuck did he get 5 new vans?
Yeah.
I'm like, you're not taking sales.
You need to tidy, clean house. I'm doing a bit of work actually at the moment with a guy who I'm coaching, and he's like 4 sales guys, and he's had to can 2 of them because they're not using the CRM. I'm like, there's no way you're ever going to change that. Like, if they're, I just go and I speak to him and I do this, and I was like, how are we measuring that?
You that's not scalable.
That's the better word. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not scalable.
I know one of my investors, one of them, demanded CRM system. I said, I don't use them. Okay. You're just basically telling me there not to give you a 2 million fund.
Yeah.
We're fucking using them. Which one is it?
Yeah.
But I had to understand why he wanted it to see it, because he wants it all tracked and he wants to be able to log in and see. Shit, they hit their targets.
Expect
yesterday.
What you inspect.
Exactly. Yeah, we're learning a lot here tonight now. We're probably giving away too much. Anyway, so listen to me. This has been fantastic. How do we get on to now the marketing side of things? Because again, it's an absolute beast. I'm not going to lie to you. I think it's one of the hardest things I've ever tried to do is try and market something to scale. But how do we get these leads now to come in? Because we can ring all these people. You can teach them how to ring. How do we now get business to flow? Or how do we promote our brand?
Yeah, and it's changed a lot. I mean, you know, I came out of college in the early 2000s. And, you know, blogging was barely a thing back then. You know, you could do Googling and, you know, research and stuff like that. But it was all reading. Now, what Gary Vaynerchuk talks about is day trading people's attention.
Yeah.
You know, you've got, you know, you ask the average American, you know, high school kid what they want to be, and they say an influencer, and you ask the Chinese kid and they say an astronaut. And like, that kind of tells you a lot about the psyche and the dopamine hit of, you know, people marinating their brains in dopamine all day long because they're getting hits off their phone. There's actually a great feature now on the phone, you can make it black and white.
Really?
Which reduces that dramatically. I was like, ooh, this stuff works. Yeah. And that's to take a break from it. But you need to grab people's attention and show them that you have something of interest right away. It's the right to earn a conversation. That's what marketing is.
So that's another fantastic point as well, the right to earn a conversation, because you can earn a conversation. You can, I mean, the best word we'll probably get out tonight is if you can earn that conversation in there, you can earn their trust.
Yeah.
You can now start to talk about the new currency, which is relationships.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, so it depends on the business and what you're offering. So the first and foremost, the thing you absolutely need to do is you need to understand what is your no-brainer offer, okay? So that's the thing that, you know, you lead with front and center as your go-to market to get out there that people can engage with for free. They can take it out for a test drive, kick the tires, whatever expression you want to use, get a look and feel for what you do, and then take it on to the next level from there. So that's typically... It could be, you know, in software, it's a trial of the product, it's a demo of the product. It's opening up behind the curtains and showing you, it's seeding it in your environment for a trial period of time so you can experience the look and feel of it. In the car industry, it's a test drive, for example. Yeah. In the property game, it might be an audit of your current financial situation and a goal setting session on where you want to get to and what that looks like and how many you need to get there and a calculator sheet, you know, things they can look, feel and play with. And it's an assessment with a human being. It's a sit-down conversation, those kinds of things. What do they look like that we can get? For Robbie, again, it's the home energy assessment piece. It's getting in. And you can charge for these, but it's the lower value. It's basically your window of your shop to get people inside. That's what you need to do. So it needs to be a no-brainer offer. I found, like, back in the day, like, for me, ebooks are phenomenally effective.
Yeah.
Because, you know, free reports, ebooks, marketing assessments. One of the really powerful strategies we used to use was the state of.
Mm.
So, you know, Platinum Properties produces this piece of documentation every year, which is the state of property investment in Ireland. So the play here is, I don't know if you're familiar with Gartner and their magic quadrant, but they're one of the greatest, you know, Ponzi mafia schemes I've ever come across. But basically their whole mantra is, in the software game, they'll go out to you and they say, I see you've created a new piece of software over there for this particular item. Like, let's say it's the new shiny spangly thing in CRM. Nobody's ever done that before. We're going to create a new category for it in our listing. You need to buy in to pay for that. Then they go to all your competitors and they say the same. But by the way, we're going to put you in the magic quadrant, which is up and to the right, and you're a leader in the space. We get you the credibility. We charge you $100,000 for that. Then we go to all your competitors and then we're going to encourage them to up their game. So they create this market competitive dynamics and then they bring in all the customers behind that. It's a beautiful model. I wish I'd thought of it. But then, you know, it's the state of property investment in Ireland. So then what you do is you go to all of the different banks, you go to all of the different partners. And I know you know all this, and you say, hey, we're producing a piece of... we're producing a survey on people's likelihood to investment, you know, their jadedness after the recession, the availability of capital, the interest of, you know, implications of vulture funds, government housing policy. We're going to be interviewing people and asking their opinion. As the CEO of AIB, would you like to be included in this? I'm like, sure, shit. Well, the CEO of Bank of Ireland, PTSB and ICS and all the rest of them are going to be on there. I can't not be seen to be there. Yeah, and my name will be there. And then you go out to market and you say, well, we have a report. We've spoken to all the banks. We know them. And we're going to release it onto the market. Do you want to understand what that looks like? It's behind a form and a landing page. So you give away your name and email and phone number to get access to this piece of, which is effectively a marketing asset. Mm. But you've now created your own network and your market in the background that has a value. And then you're bringing it to market. And then you're getting in people. And then you're connecting them, you're brokering in the middle, which is what a good entrepreneur does. Mm. So that's the first step in the marketing to attract people to your business. So in today's world, what would I do is I would get a video editor. I'd ring Ozzy, obviously. Or I wouldn't steal him off your head. But you go on, you get an Ozzy type profile who can zap that up, put it into a swishing headline that says, property investment in the Irish market up 25% year on year, interest rates set to go down, etc. Join the conversation, get involved, etc. And that becomes video, that becomes discussion, that becomes, you know, you're literally talking a few seconds today in an app to get them to download that. And then you nurture them in the background to an email, to a conversation around booking in an assessment. You build up that assessment to be the be all and end all and the inflection point where they need to do their homework, they need to prepare and that kind of, there's a couple of different ways of doing that. You can nurture them. If it's an e-com play, it's an offline kind of, it's like a non-human touch type of thing. But that's effectively what I would do starting from scratch. But every business is different.
Yeah. So you'd have to assess the business first, find out what works, which you'd know really quickly, and then put the system in place and go for it.
Absolutely.
And how many different companies would you see that's out there today that would need, like, say there's five different tactics? Because at the end of the day, like, a company will do up an ad. And I've seen this and I've done it. We've done up an ad, we've done up a budget, we pushed it out there, none. I'm like, what the fuck?
It's the ask and the pain.
Yeah, we've just completely opened that window, because like Zuckerberg isn't going to ring you up, LinkedIn aren't going to ring you up and go, hey, Paul, you know, you shouldn't
take your money.
Like no, they're not billionaires for nothing. They're your ad is being paid for. Like, we buy houses fast, you create an ad, you open a budget spend, you put it out there and nothing comes in.
Yeah, it's a funny. I spoke to a family member only yesterday actually about this, looking to do social media ads. And they said, well, what's this conversion tag thing I need to do? And I was like, what's the ask here? And they're like, oh, I just want people to buy my crap. And I'm like, okay, well, like you've a really good product, but do you know that selling them an ad on a platform is going to drive them to make that decision there and then? What's the ticket value? What's the cost of the ad? And what's your XVAP price and your profit margin that's going to cover that? And how many of them do you need to do? So what's the objective? The objective is to take them to a landing page where there's a buy now button. And then that is successful if they've clicked the buy now and they've gone through and put their details in, so you know the ads worked. Mm. But how do you know that your buyer is ready to make that discussion? I was actually involved in an Australian social media organization, and they said, I just opened a new bank account, you know? And like, yeah, I had to switch banks. And then turns out they don't accept Facebook likes as deposits, you know? I was like, absolutely. There's the two extremes there, you know? You know, there's vanity metrics and then there's sanity metrics. The vanity metrics are, well, we have X followers on our LinkedIn, or we've X followers on our Facebook page and our YouTube and all that. And how much does that mean to you?
Yeah.
Like, what's the play here? Of course you can. Yeah. You get bot farms all over the world to do that for you. Yeah. That doesn't matter. So you've got to really reach out to the person's need, their pain. Okay, so What is it that they've done that's so painful, that's so awful? What is it that they've tried to fix that pain that hasn't worked? What is it that you offer that you're able to help address that? And what is it that they can do at a super low barrier to entry to take the next step, to take the action, to actually engage with you to solve that problem?
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. But again, that's the problem. You just said, what if? That's the problem in marketing that's very, very difficult. Like, we all look at O'Leary and we look at different, a fantastic marketer. Like, in fact, I start getting a bit obsessed listening back to his old podcast.
PR guy, I would say.
Yeah, big time. But he's just done some crazy shit. And even with Valentine's offer, let's do a flight for €69 to Rome. Like, and then, you know, and then he'd ring back in, like, and he'd say, you know, it's trying sales. So what are we? Right, let's try and make it a slag the Pope or something. And he done that. Next thing, sales went to Rome and through the roof.
I think what's cool about him, and look, it's an attitude, it's a mindset. He's trying stuff, right?
Yeah, constantly.
This is the thing. And you don't know, like a lot of the time people are like, oh, I'll put an ad in the paper, or I'll do a magazine ad. And I'm like, you know, I used to get this in hopes for them. They're like, yeah, we spend a lot of money on brand awareness. So I was like, great. How do you measure that?
You can't
measure brand awareness. It's not worth it. It's not worth the pot of business.
You cannot measure that at all.
And if it's not worth measuring, and some marketers in cushy jobs are afraid of this because they're like, well, hang on, if I bring this tool to my boss that's going to make me accountable, it's a bit like turkeys voting for Christmas. You know, it'll show out what I've been doing wrong for the last 5 years. Thanks, but no thanks, right? So the other great thing I kind of walked away from my experience in digital marketing with was, in God we trust, but all others bring data. Right, you need to live by that. And if you take the O'Leary idea of try everything and then look for engagement, what does that do? Well, actually, we saw a spike in our conversions. Okay, great. But did that mean they were more ready for sale? Do we have to nurture them more? You've got to try that. It's got to be trial and error.
Yeah.
And it's dependent on your market. It's dependent on your offer. And as I said, back to the tofu, mofu, bofu sort of stuff. Everybody wants to go to the bottom. So you wouldn't go on a first date. Right? And this is what the big fallacy in marketing is. You wouldn't go on a first date and go, how many kids are you planning on having with me? You know?
It's not going to happen. But he does that thing. But I would love to get him on here. I think we've started to make a drive to get him on. So he'll probably end up in one of these seats sometime soon, which is fantastic. But again, he's all back to the call. He's back to how many flights did we sell? Like, it's so important to the business, right? Well, you know, someone in the business would say, don't do that. Don't talk about 69 on Valentine's week. Everyone knows what you're doing. Fucking do it. Let's talk about it though. They talk about it. And if they talk about it and they get a bit of crack and, you know, next thing they're buying seats off him. Fantastic.
He's not hurting anyone.
No, he's not. No. But so leads me back then to another question in marketing. Like, it's a constant struggle.
Yeah.
Like, it's a constant, whoever's involved in that in your team, it's not funny. It's not, you're constantly getting burnt out trying to think of how now I get that phone. So we spoke about earlier on of if the phone rings and the leads come in, how you nurture them, how you systemize it, how you try and take that to a close.
Yeah.
But again, with the marketing side of things, somebody is constantly getting burnt out because it's not just one ad. It's thousands upon thousands of pieces of content that eventually get the phone to ring and then, you know, becomes a sale, becomes profitable.
And ironically, I think in marketing today, you should hire a really young person with a lack of experience.
Yeah.
And I'm very serious about that because they know it and they get it and they can grow. You don't want to be hiring a marketer with a lot of, you know, experience, because the experience they have is probably in leadership and management and they're away from the digital sphere. Yeah. I would say if I was starting a business from scratch, I would hire a 20-odd-year-old who does TikTok, does Instagram, can do Facebook, can create video ads, and is relentless in multiple platforms and data.
Really strong.
100%. And is willing to learn and put in. And okay, I come in. You want somebody beating down your office door going, I tried this thing. I want to try this thing as well and this thing. And go do it all.
You connect him to commission.
Yeah.
And he's 100% behind you.
100%, yeah.
He'll do extremely well for himself. Plus, he'll do extremely well for the business.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
As business owners, we want the phone to ring.
Absolutely.
And then we want to be able to nurture it. I had one in my head that you earlier on when we were talking about saying no.
Yeah.
Early days in business, this guy was ringing in here and he was like, I want this and I want that and I want this and I want that. And I was listening to the call a couple of times. I walked back into the office the second week he was on again. He wanted this and he wanted that. And whoever was on the phone for me at the time said, well, look, you know, we have what you want. It's in here. It's guaranteed. I've ran it through Paul. It is no issue. You know, and we were trying to obviously get him in. He's still in the group.
Yeah. Okay.
He's going to know when he listens to this. And I said, I'm going to show you how to deal with him. So I took the phone and I said, listen, don't fuck around anymore. We have what you want. I'm telling you it's here. I'm telling you the product you want. We can get it for you. So now you've got to make a decision. You either fucking buy and join or don't ring the office again, wasting my staff time. Now fuck right off. And I hung up the phone. 10 minutes later, bing, said to me, that lad is just bought. And I said, well, why wouldn't he? We have what he wants. Yeah. We're 100%. You're fucking around with this call. Like, understand when someone's annoying you and then take that one word, no, and use it in my office. Don't be afraid to use it. Yeah. We don't have to get every sale through the door.
I'm a big believer in that. Because you in sales, you want to show your best, you know, you want to come across as being nothing's a problem when providing a service. Like, you're not in a hotel where, you know, you're being waited on hand and foot. That's not what a salesperson is doing. A salesperson is there to qualify their time as well. Because that's one thing you'll never get back. And the most powerful thing I've had that situation only recently where we told somebody we're not going to work with them anymore. We can't devote any more time because of our energies invested in this deal so far don't equate to the dollars we're bringing in on the back end. So for us, it doesn't make economic sense to continue this and devote more resources. And we were getting questions like, you know, I heard they've the internet computers now type stuff. You know, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I just said enough is enough. With the PO coming in now, so but that's for the same reason, because you said no, and I think salespeople are often afraid to say no to people. But it's, you know, and you don't have to say it in a harsh way. You can say it in, look, politely and respectfully. I think, unfortunately, we've delivered considerable time and effort into this. Mutually, we've invested in this. I don't feel it's going to lead to an outcome that's going to be fair. So you have a decision to make. Do you want to continue to buy? Because we've made a decision. We're not going to continue to have this conversation because it doesn't seem to be progressing in any meaningful way. So I'll let you decide what you want to do next. It's up to you. Because you're giving them the power to make the decision, but you're clearly stating out where you stand.
Yeah. And you don't want to be working with people that's just dragging there. And, you know,
there's a few red flags there as well, you know.
Yeah.
On the front. Because in our game, you have customer success managers who handle them post-sale and build a relationship even further. And one of the things I'm trying to do is to make sure we don't get those fellas on the front end, because you're just going to, there are red flags and triggers of personality types that are going to cause problems that you kind of know.
Yeah. You don't need it around. So again, then if we get the marketing correct, we get the sales process correct, we get our staff to actually understand, because everybody knows that, Paul's the salesman around here, or John's going to close that, or let him do that. But I truly believe all your staff, if they're in the office and they pick up a phone, they need to be trained.
Yeah.
That's just fact.
They're representing you, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, and it's about that first connection at the start. What else is in there to make your business much more successful and to really, we talked about brand awareness earlier on. That's what I was going to say to you.
Yeah.
We talked about brand awareness earlier on, and I thought, you know, I've seen this person before and he was a budget for brand awareness. And when we said that brand awareness can't be measured, there was one thing that just stood in my mind. And I'm only saying this 5 years later. And I know I said it to you backstage earlier on.
Yeah.
I done a deal last week. It's probably one of the biggest deals we've done. And the boss walked in and he went, oh, how's it going? Da-da-da, shook my hand. Now, I'm just taking you back to brand awareness.
Yeah.
Because he would have known my brand.
But you built your brand by default that paid off later. The hard work and the heavy lifting had been done beforehand.
Exactly.
You know, I find in more traditional companies that are decades old, they have someone sat in the corner who has a nice cushy budget and they're spending it on brand by picking out magazine appearances to go into newspapers, right? That's the handiest number in the world.
Yeah.
Right? But that's for companies who are at a certain level that they can afford to have something. Now, if I was starting out from scratch again, I wouldn't have a brand awareness budget.
Yeah.
I'd have a digital budget. But by default, that leads into creating a brand later because you're getting eyeballs. The good news is that today you can become, you know, an influencer if your content is good and you can reach a certain niche and you can get out there on social at relatively low cost.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that becomes a brand in and of itself. But the hard work's been done already, if that makes sense.
Well, that's the thing. That's the point I was trying to get to. With the brand and all this thing that everyone's talking about, brand awareness, brand this, brand that. If you drive it hard enough and you're connecting, say, you're doing business with another business or whatever it is, and they walk in and go, you know, everyone that's gone into a sales meeting, you have what you want, they have what they want. And if you can communicate in and there's no one shouting and screaming and you agree, fantastic.
Exactly.
That's what everyone wants. When someone walks in the room, shakes your hand and goes, yeah, what do you want? I want this, this, this. Yeah, no problem. Done? I'm like,
and a little too that, easy. I'm skeptical.
That is a bit of brand awareness in there.
Yeah.
That is, I would say to a smaller company, definitely work on your appearance. Definitely work on getting your brand awareness out, because at the end of a sale, it's going to kick back in. Don't allow stupid budgets for it. Work on it.
Yeah, look, and that's not to say, you know, there's plenty of books written on this, Dress for Success and those sorts of ones. You know, the way you present yourself matters. You know, and selling digitally on Zoom calls, you know, show up, have energy, sit up in the chair, turn your camera on.
Yeah.
You know, be clear, coherent. If the broadband isn't great, reschedule. It's not worth the pain of going through that, because people are super unforgiving of that.
Yeah. You turn your camera on, you're triggering a load. We done another Zoom call one time, and it was a sales thing. And this company was trying to get us to partner with them as such. And I turned into the call and I said to Ozzy, turn the computer on there. Where is this dude? And he says, oh, my camera doesn't work. And I was like, your camera doesn't work. You're a much bigger company than me. And he was taking the 15-minute slot with me. Like, this is the sales guy. I said, I hope to God you show this to your boss. Don't ring here again. Boom. If they can't show up on front of a screen and turn their fucking camera on,
no way
was I buying from them.
I mean, Jeremy Lee Minor talks about this, where he's like, is your camera broken?
Yeah, yeah.
Because mine's working. I don't want to be, because there's an etiquette there. Like, I see this every day of the week. If somebody's in a negotiation with you and they're turning their camera off and you have yours on, that's a total power play.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in that.
Yeah.
I'm like, seems like your camera is broken on your side. Oh, it's not broken. I just want to put it on today, or I'm sick. You get that a bit as well. Yeah. For me personally, I feel a bit uncomfortable, because I feel like, what's the etiquette here? Have we even written the rules in the digital playbook for this? I feel like we should be talking to each other. Do you disagree?
Yeah. Or is there 200 other people in the room and I'm talking to 200 people here? So any other good final tips on, is there anything we may have missed in the midst of the importance of sales, marketing, exposure, company brand awareness?
Oh, there's so much to talk about. We could be here for days, I suppose. I suppose one of the things, you know, makes a good salesperson is just really curious, asking good questions and having high energy. I mean, particularly for guys at the beginning of their sales career, we've got a business development team and they've the hardest job in the company. They're literally tasked with calling out to people and sending them custom emails and developing a relationship from cold and getting told no all the time. And when they do get a deal, they have to give it away to someone else to close it, you know? Yeah, so that's a hard game. And I think, you know, in your sales career, if you can get through that, you can go anywhere. Yeah. You know, you really, really can. And, you know, a lot of the tech companies have a very, very structured way of moving your career forward. Like, you know, it's become business development, do inbound, then do outbound, then move up to small business, then do medium business, then do large enterprise, then do sales leadership, then do second line management, which is managing the managers. Then set the strategy for the territory, you know, like it's quite structured, you know.
Yeah, so the profits are ginormous.
Yeah, they are. 70-80% in a lot of cases. Yeah.
Yeah, that's huge. Small businesses out there, if someone wanted to even sit down with you and just, because a lot of businesses won't want to do this. And a lot of businesses are probably, the owner's probably sitting there tonight going, yeah, I actually heard the way someone spoke on the phone there. I heard, and that's not the way I want my brand represented, or, you know, or now they might have listened to this and go, Jesus Christ, sales is so important. And, and they can't do all the sales. You have to be able to let somebody else in the office or train a team.
I 100% agree. So the one piece of advice I would say is, if you're that business owner, go in a room on a weekend, maybe do it on a day, lock yourself away and get out a blank piece of paper and write down every single step and inflection point in your business. And what I mean by that is, someone rings you for a job or a quote, what do you say? What happens next? What's the outcome of that? Where does it go into? What happens when they book it in? How do you close that? What do you say? What's the language you use at every step? What's the expectation on their side? How are you going to generate that on the front end in terms of the marketing interest, et cetera, as well? And how do you want that replicated? Because, like, I can't express this enough. Like, I saw this when I consulted in small business. I saw this in recruitment in a big way. I want to hire someone. Right, yeah, someone who's good at this. Right, well, what is that? And they wouldn't put the brain power into thinking about the person. Like, I want you to walk me through your ideal customer. I want you to talk to me about what's perfect about that customer. Where do they live? What do they drive? What do they need in their house? What's the question they ask? How are you going to handle that? What are your three objection handling statements back to them? What are the things they'll walk away with and go, oh, what a great experience. Wow, I feel energized. I really feel like he got me, do you know? Like, he connected with me. There's a plan there. You know, don't ever allow yourself the luxury of going, Asher, I'll just see if the phone rings and see what happens. I give it a lash.
Yeah, that's
nice. And people go, I hate lazy phrases. It drives me mad. Like, I'll just get back to you in a week. Yeah. Or, you know, I have a bit of a think about this and sure, and Irish people are desperate for this. Yeah. I'll let you know. I'll think about it. And sure, no, no.
So you're saying in the process itself, literally zone in, lock yourself away, find out exactly what you want out of it.
Yeah.
From both sides, and then deliver a plan and execute.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I've thought about every step.
Yeah. Fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. Well, Ross, like, if someone does, I hope what happens after this is that maybe there's 40 people, five or 10. And I know, sorry, we didn't even speak about this, but I just think it's so, so important to small businesses, because I'm not too sure of the exact fact, the number. I just would not let one of my companies go out of business. But I know there's a lot of people that start up small companies, medium companies, and a lot of them die of debt.
70% of them fail the first 5 years.
Yeah. Okay, so 70%. And 70% of them probably didn't zone in properly to put a marketing plan in place and a sales structure and plan. If they did, maybe they'd be still here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So my vision on this may be that there might be 40 people up in the studio upstairs and you're training them the system in each of them businesses, which would be fantastic.
Yeah, sure.
Weekend or a fantastic day. Any final nuggets or thoughts? Or
I don't know. I mean, ask me offline if you wish. Reach out to me on LinkedIn if you want to, and through the group in Platinum. More than happy to help anybody and have a conversation and see what makes sense. Every business is different. There's no cookie cutter approach to, nor would that be right. But if you can really break it down into the component steps and think about what happens at every stage and what you say and be super deliberate in what it is you're doing and delivering, then at least you can start to measure and improve on where you're at. Because if you don't know what's broken, it's like a car that won't start. Yeah. That could be anything, you know, so break it down.
Well, usually we look into the business and say, well, there's no money coming in, or you know that you've only got a 3 months runway left there. Or maybe you've got a fantastic business and there's no runway there. And you need to step outside it for a second and say, hold on a minute, I've got a fantastic, unique business.
Yeah.
There's tons of money out there. Why is this happening to me? And
you pitch
usually
it into existence. Because there's plenty of money, you just need to find it.
Yeah.
And you need to figure out, what am I willing to give away? And, you know, what's my business value? What's my multiple of EBITDA? And therefore, what's an investor going to look at? What would be attractive to them? And they're the conversations I tend to have with people, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people, amazing product, particularly in the tech world.
Yeah.
But tech people don't like talking to other people, you know? Yeah, like, So it's about, how do you bring that to market? And that's where the real magic happens, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think it's definitely, as you said earlier on, the very start, all this can be true. You're not going to be born like a little baby and say, hey, we have got the best salesman here. You can teach your staff this, which is most important. Ross, it's been a fantastic interview. I'll rewatch this one myself, because there's plenty of little things said earlier on I'm going to have to get out. Where exactly can people catch it if they want to?
LinkedIn's probably the best place. If you just throw my name into LinkedIn, that's probably the best place. I did have a website over the years, but it's gone by the wayside. I tend to work with a handful of folks on a monthly basis. Yeah, LinkedIn's probably, or through yourself.
LinkedIn
the best
or through Platinum, or send an email in or whatever. Yeah. You'll contact them. Fantastic. Well done.
Be my pleasure, Paul.
Thank you very much. Okay, so again, lots of value. Rewatch this, especially if your sales are down. Try and figure out why they're down. Another pointer may be, don't sit around with your staff and your sales are down. Don't sit with the staff in your office. Step outside the business. Maybe link in with Ross. And try and develop a plan, a structure, and a process that you can get your sales back on key. Hope you enjoyed this episode of Platinum Talks. We'll chat to you very soon.